Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Our guest this week, Nick Bollettieri. You know Nick. Of course you do. Everyone does. Nick needs no introduction, but he is still going strong as an octogenarian. And the reason we're visiting with him, A, it's always entertaining, even at age 86, and perhaps especially at age 86. He is always a good conversation. But also, he is the subject of a new documentary, Love Means Zero, which will be on Showtime starting Saturday, June 23rd at 9 p.m. Eastern. Here we go. This is the full Bollettieri, uncut, in 3, 2, 1. How are you?
I'm doing fine, John.
You ready to talk shop for a little bit?
Hey, with you, John, I can talk anything, baby.
Oh, likewise. Pleasure to hear that. How are you? How you doing?
I'm doing fine. We're getting ready to go to Malaysia tomorrow, John.
Is that Malaysia? I thought you were going to say a grass court tournament they play in England every summer.
No, I'm going to go to help develop tennis to the young children and help the coaches. So that's what I'm going to be doing.
So I want to talk about this documentary, which is a good segue. How do we feel about this thing?
Well, I tell you, it's really came across the way I was. And a lot of people said, Nick, maybe it could have been a little softer. But you know what, John? I made some serious mistakes, and I did a lot of those things, John, because I never thought ever of what I did. I just did it. And I've just completed, John, about 400 to 500 hours. I wrote everything because I don't have a computer. I don't know how to use it in my book. And it's called A Coach's Journey. And it'll be coming out during the Open. And I've never took time to really realize what I have done. And this is the first time I got to know myself. And in the movie, I went so quick. I just did those things, John. And some of them turned out to be not too good, but, you know, both the guys forgave me. But I think the movie comes across really how I did things, John.
Let's talk about your book in a second, but I'm curious how this movie came to be. I mean, it sounds like you didn't know the director ahead of time, and he calls you and says, hey, I want to do this documentary?
Well, I think that Ann White, you know, my first student, one of my first two or three, she was instrumental in getting this going. And then out in California, introduced me to the team, and they said, Nick, you want to do it? I said, hell, I'll do it, whatever you want to do. And I never thought, John, that it would be that much study and research and getting those films and people. It was, and then when I saw the big poster out there, Santa Monica Boulevard, I said, holy shit, have my name up there like that. So it was the first time I've ever sat down to see the things I did, because I never took time to do it. In fact, I told the producer, Jason, he kept on asking me. I said, look, if you ask me one more time, the interview's over. The show's over. I said, when I tell you I don't remember, I don't remember.
You didn't remember the names of all your wives. How could you remember specifics of tennis matches?
And I still don't remember, John. But you know that Andre and Curry, those are my boys, and Andre has always been in Jim Curry, and the movie came across fantastic. And
you think so? Because you know that you did. I know you did. You did hours and hours and hours of interviews, and it's a 90-minute film, and obviously a lot of those voices are other people. You're happy with how it came out. You recognize that guy.
And I tell you, John, I think that some of the people I know real well said, Nick, that was a no bullshit movie, and that's why they enjoyed it.
That's high praise.
And I think, John, to have made it fluffy and flowery, that's not Nick, John. And that's why I believe people will really enjoy the movie, John.
I want to ask you about men versus women, because I think a lot of people associate you with Andre and Jim, probably first and foremost. But I would argue that you had as much success with girls and women as you did with boys and men. How differently relate to them, one gender to the other?
I think that, first of all, doing this and doing my book, I've been with a lot of girls. I think with the girls, John, the difference is that you have to be a little bit more careful on how you say things, because they're much more emotional. With the guys, you can be a little rough. You have to know, be careful also what you say. But with the girls, they were more individualistic in a lot of ways. Not that the boys weren't. So I think with the girls has been very interesting. And when I look over my career, I've been with as many girls as I've been with guys.
Yeah, right. Who was the toughest girl you worked with? And
I think probably the one that kept me out there the longest, not the toughest, was Monica Seles. And I'm going to make you laugh, John. In the book, it has a chapter about practice. The sun coming up, the moon shining. Nick, give me one more ball. Give me one more ball. And a picture of Monica. Then it has a picture of Andre. Andre, what time are we going to practice? And Nick, right after lunch, don't forget I have a hair appointment at 2:30. So you see, they're very different. Monica Seles, you could never yell at her. My God. She was fabulous. And her practice was far different than Sharapova's practice and Venus. I think that the girls' practices were the difference than the guys' practices. You had to get to know that girl a lot more. The boys, you can do this, do that. With the girls, I think you had to know more of an approach, that each one of them were very different.
So how do you do this for tennis? I mean, because this is a challenge every coach has, right? The buttons you push for one athlete don't work for the next one. But you've got different genders. You've got different ethnicities. Yeah. You have people that arrived at your facility. I mean, Jim has this line. He was begging his parents to go there. Andre was forced to go there. How do you get this relationship where you know what motivates athlete A and not athlete B?
John, this is very important. There are a lot of coaches that know much more about the hip turn, this turn. God gave me the ability to read and how to reach people. Boris Becker said it fantastic. He said, Nick stood close to me. He saw the simple things, gave me a simple tip, and walked away. And that's the message or the gift that I've been born with. And then being able to how to relate it. I could yell at one of the girls. I could yell a little with Serena. I was afraid to raise my voice, and she whacked me across the head. But one time I said, she broke a racket out on the court, was walking off. I said, "Get your ass up!" She said, "Nobody ever talked to me, not even my dad, like that." But I got back out there for Nick. But I think that the girls' practices were more just about the girl. The guys could practice more with other guys, but the girls are different, John. But I believe the key to my success was learning about that person, how to talk to them. And to do that, John, you have to do a little bit research their family, their brothers. How do they do in school? Are they introvert, extrovert? You have to do a little bit of studying before you start, talking to that person. And then, John, Andre Agassi made me a better listener. And I began to listen to the students more. And when you listen to them, John, they give you the answer that they will accept almost with you putting in your input. So that's the difference between the girls and the guys, John.
So I'm thinking what struck me, a few things struck me watching this film. One of them obviously was Andre decided not to be part of it, and that really seemed to you got emotional. I mean, that seemed to impact you.
It did, and I tell you, the two things that I have done that I would have done a lot different. John, if I had flown out to Las Vegas and told Andre what was on my mind, I probably would still be on the team. I really would. And then for me, to do what I did to Jim Curry would be the same as me sitting with my two young sons and rooting for one son and not the other son. Those are the two biggest blunders I've made in my career. I made a lot, John.
When you aligned yourself with Andre when he played.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course, Jim is one of my biggest supporters, John. Oh my God. But those were two. And the nice things that Andre said about me at the Hall of Fame, and we always talk now. If it wasn't for Nick, I wouldn't be here. And his trainer, Gil Reyes, God bless him, wrote a beautiful thing for my book. He said, "Nick, the team that we had will never be duplicated in the history of tennis." So I did make those two blunders. And of course, kicking Kathleen Horvath out. I don't know if I call that a blunder, John. That was when the dad had her hanging from the tree at night in the backyard when we're all together to get taller. And Kathleen never wanted to be part of group teaching, always wanted to be individual. But of course, Kathleen has been awful nice to me as well. So, but John, when you deal with thousands of people like I did, you got to fuck up.
I was
going to
say, my aces, my faults.
Yes, sir.
So I'm thinking, too, watching this, that Andre has become Andre. I mean, Jim, you and I, Jim is a friend, and Jim is one of the smartest, most thoughtful people I know. Martin has a big job at the USTA. You mentioned Kathleen Horvath, who worked for Goldman. You don't always have this track record with former athletes. Did you realize the caliber of people you were dealing with? What do you make of how they turned out as adults in their 40s and 50s?
Well, John, in my book, I've got about 30 or 40 beautiful messages of the impact that I've made on people. I mean, look at Dave Brewer. He's the head of the big tournament. I have 15 to 18 college coaches, John, that went through this academy. It's amazing. And then to hear one boy, I came, Nick, 13 years old, a little Jewish boy. I was shy. I didn't know what to do, Nick. I didn't know what to do. Went on to be the captain of the Georgetown team, played number one. Now he's a lawyer. And he said, "Nick, I couldn't have done it without being with you." So those letters, John, that I have gotten back and put in the book, that's made me. No, it's not the 10 number one, John. It's the impact I've made on people's lives, John. Adopting my two sons, the Ayers Voluntary Inner City Program, baby. I began that. This, to me, I'm the first white person to be in the Black Tennis Hall of Fame. Those are big honors, John. Those are big honors, my boy. Last summer, the Library of Congress for Famous Veterans flew me in and did the video, and I'll be in that Congress for Famous for the rest of my life. I mean, shit, I never thought these things would happen like this. But remember, my grandmother and my father, they helped me. They helped me from the beginning.
That?
Well, my grandmother said, Sonny, if you do everything the teachers say to do, you are a good boy, go out and play. Not like parents, did you get an A? Did you win today? And my father said something when 60 Minutes was on. He said, son, when my mother began cursing at the television, my daddy said, son, remember something. Whatever people say, if they're talking about you, they're thinking about you. If you ain't nobody going to talk about you. And whatever they say, son, you say thank you and let the results of what you do in life do the talking for you. Those words and my military career of being a paratrooper, the discipline. And John, I'm honored in my book, the chapter on leadership and trust and teamwork, you know, did it? The commander of the Blue Angels. And at the end, it shows me getting out of the plane when I flew with them. John, writing this book, John, and seeing the movie, it's the first time I've ever slowed down, John.
Keep going with that. Because people haven't read the book yet, but they'll see this movie. But I want to know from you, I mean, what did you learn about yourself? I mean, when was this all crystallized and you had time to pause and actually look backwards and not forwards. What did you learn about yourself?
I wasn't afraid to do things that people said couldn't be done. That's the biggest thing I learned. Have courage to do things that people say can't be done, because in life, John, most people do things they know they'll be a success in, not Nick Voluntary. I did things that I didn't know of the goddamn outcome, John. Building the first live in the tennis academy of the world. Doing those things. And I tell you, John, I never really stopped to think about this stuff. And, you know, one of my buddies said, about me marrying, he said, Nick, most people get married, say, you do it as a novelty. It's shit. But, you know, and let's not call it a penalty. In my book, I really apologize to my children. My coach's journey, John, took me away from my families. And I can't call it a penalty, John, because if I stood home, John, I probably would have fucked up anyway.
No, but when your ex-wife says it's either, what'd she call Andre? It's either me or the weasel? What'd you call him?
Yeah, that's right. That's it. And I took my laundry. It was in the laundry machine, put it in the car, and I went and stayed in Fritz Now's house.
No, but
I gave her the house. I gave her the car, the fucking boats, and the alimony settlement. But I said, it's Andre. And I left the house, John.
She said, it's me or Andre Agassi the weasel. And you said,
That's it.
Throwing my lot with the weasel.
And that's it. I left, John.
So what did you mean? You had one line in the film. You said, if you don't do wrong, you never reach the top of the mountain. What did you mean by that?
I believe if you don't do wrong, you can't learn, John. If you do everything the first time, you've eliminated some things, John. You got to fall down, John, in order to come back and do it a little better the next time. That's what I learned, John.
So confess, though. What,
I, never, The what, John?
No, I was thinking this was. I interpreted that to mean more sort of if you got to cut a few corners along the way. That you got to push the envelope a little bit.
You have to, John. You have no other choice. You have to push hard. I tell you one thing.
What's that?
John, I took advantage of every person I met, John. My name can be Bollettieri Steen or Bollettieri. And I'm telling you, I've been to more Bob Metzes and Bob Vices and all of that shit. But you know what, John? For Father's Day yesterday, I sent out personally 130 little messages to the guys I know. Okay? That's what I do. I remember birthdays, John. I go to bar mitzvahs. I'm the godfathers. I have taken time. And remember this, John. I will never leave a court having the student, especially young ones, thinking they're a failure and go home, not eat, don't do their homework, low self-esteem, and then they're subject to the devils that are after them. I don't care who it is, John. And remember something else my record proves. A lot of people I taught didn't have money, baby. I don't give a shit. I taught them anyway. Look at my Martin Blackman. Look where he is right now.
That's right.
I mean, Kathy Rinaldi said, and I'll tell you one thing, Katrina Adams has done a hell of a job. And I love the inner city programs with Kirk Camperman and all of these people that I do. I do 15 functions a year. And I tell you one thing, I'm going to tell you a funny story. I guess it was 12, 14 years ago, I'm at the French Open. And this man asked me to come down by the river there to do an interview. And he said, Nick, I'm going to bring tennis to millions of homes. I said, who's this crazy son of a bitch? He said, I'm going to be crazy like you, building the first tennis. And that's my close friend, Ken Solomon. And look what he's done.
I was going to say, he's got a little Bollettieri in him, doesn't he? You just
no
keep plowing
shit,
ahead.
And he's one of my best friends. And, of course, hey, what about my Mary Carrillo? Holy shit, baby. I mean, I'm a lucky guy, John. I mean, I got you. It's just amazing. And then remember, I always had to shut my eyes when Brad Gilbert hit the ball. His strokes were so ugly, he had to put two pair of glasses on. But he knew how to beat you mentally, John. He knew how to beat you mentally.
So wait, keep going with that theme, though. I mean, how much of this, whether it's Jim or Mary or, you know, Kathleen Horma, how much of this is tennis? I mean, how much of it is this is just a unique sport that builds certain core competencies and, like you say, doesn't traffic in bullshit and
well, John,
it's solitary
you gotta
confinement?
Remember.
How much of this is tennis?
You got to remember something, John. Tennis is a very lonely sport, far different than most sports. So when you're a one-on-one and you're out there by yourself, that ain't easy. The other sports, you know, you can be covered up a little bit by your team.
You learn a lot about yourself.
Tennis,
yeah, exactly.
You sure do. And remember, a lot of people, you judge them not when everything is going right, but how they react when things are going wrong. I mean, look at my Maria Sharapova fighting the injuries. Look at my Tommy Haas, son of a bitch. Look at him. And look at Venus, the blood disease. And I'll tell you one thing. In my book, baby, I said, let me tell you something about the crazy man, Richard Williams. Dad, you don't know what you're doing. You got to get a coach. Yeah. Look what happened when the girls came out. You know why? Richard Williams was willing to do things that other people didn't do. Okay. And it was a big honor to be in that team.
And you still call these players my. I mean, you still feel a real kinship. Sons of Nick and daughters of Nick.
When I had the only time I've been sick in my life, I had pneumonia. Serena Williams and Anna Kournikova filled the hospital with so much flowers. I tried to sell them, goddamn it, before I left. But you should see, John, the messages I get. And I'm a lucky guy, John. And my Tommy Haas, look at that. Came here at 11 years old. His sister was playing the Orange Bowl. She came home and said, I'm going home. This ain't for me. And 2 years later, his daddy writes me a note, Nick, I'm giving my son to you. And Tommy Haas came to me, baby. And look what he's done. And I, you know, very few coaches, John, have had the opportunity to do what I've done, John. I had those five condominiums. I had Anna Kournikova in one. I had Wendy Nelson in another one. I had Tommy Haas in another one. In my house, I had 10 people, John, in the beginning. 10 people.
All at your house.
They were like cockroaches at night going in the refrigerator here and there. But that's how it started, John.
This sounds like a reality show.
It could be, John.
So you're a no bullshit guy. I got a no bullshit question for you. I always heard, how many players from overseas are the age they say they are? I always wanted to ask you that.
How many players what?
That come to you from overseas are the age they say they are.
I take the Fifth Amendment.
That's one thing I always wanted to ask you that. You're taking the Fifth.
You know what? A lot of them came to me, you know, at young ages, though. There's no question about it. There were a lot of young boys that came. Paul Henri Mateau, he was a youngster when he came here. And, Kay Nishikori, look, he came, he's 13. He looked like he was still in diapers. Rafael Reggi, you know, I mean, God, but these were all youngsters when they came here, John.
You ever have a kid that you don't send off for discipline reasons, but you just say, I get the feeling you'd be better served elsewhere, or maybe you need to go back home? I don't have a good feeling about this.
Well, at times, what I do there is, John, if the dreams are unrealistic, I'm very truthful with the parents, then they got to make a decision. Because remember, only 1% out of 3,000 people make it, John. Now, where did I close my eyes? Jim Curry said, Nick, throw him out. He broke an order. I closed my eyes on Andre.
Right.
He broke every goddamn rule in the world. But God said to me, Nick, keep this guy. He's going to be special.
Let me throw this one at you with Andre.
Okay.
There was part of you that had a glint in your eye that did not mind the rebel spirit. You are not a guy that has much use for convention, and you had a kindred spirit in this kid who was pushing rules and doing things a little differently. That didn't offend you the way it would some other people. What do you think of that?
I think that's the way Andre was, and God kept saying to me, Nick, stay with this guy. He's different, but someday he will be special. And that's what I did. That's a message that came to me. How can I get those messages? I don't know, John. They just came. And when you have that much variety, John, look at the characters that I've had. They were all different, John. Every one of them were different. And
yeah,
I was able
to... That's what we were saying before. Rich kids and kids from challenged upbringings. And you did not get a prototype.
No, we sure didn't. And I believe that was a test, John, because if you try to put all of them into the same mold, John, it can't be done.
Who's more Balotelli? Who do you see yourself, who do you relate to more, Nadal or Federer?
I think that I'd have to say a little bit of each. First of all, Nadal. In my book, by the way, I said most people are born in a hospital. He was born in red clay. But he's got big balls, baby. And at the end of his chapter, I said, it's a good thing you made a lot of money because your laundry bills take the red clay out. Unbelievable. But he's got balls. He runs. He jumps. Everything. And then you go to the other guy, Roger Federer, who... is totally different on and off the court. And I don't think, John, that we'll have too many people like either one of them. And by the way, I didn't know until a year after I got into the Hall of Fame and Paul Annacone sent me two framed pictures of why I should get in the Hall of Fame. And you know who they were from?
Who's that?
Pete Sampras and Roger Federer. Two beautiful letters, John. You, someday when you hear, John, tears came to my eyes, John.
Both supporting supporting your candidacy.
Yes, sir. And another person who's been on my side, of course, is my Billie Jean King. But I'm going to give you a funny story of Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale brought his two daughters to me, Sherry and Terry, when he left Detroit. So he's on a stadium hard court, and I'm on the red clay court. And he yells out at me, Nick, what are you doing with that skinny thing there? I said, Dickie, she's going to be number one in the world. What the fuck you mean? Get your ass over here with my girls. The girl was Monica Seles. But of course, his girls went to Notre Dame and played for the team. And Dick is one of my biggest friends, by the way. So those are the things.
I hope you remind him of that.
Oh, I do. I do. And by the way, Serena's coach, Patrick Murdico, he's a terrific guy, by the way. He does a nice job.
The Bolotari of the Riviera. Have you seen his facility?
No, we were supposed to have a Patrick Nick, a big seminar in April, but he was having a little difficulty with his staff, so we're going to do it next year. And he says, Nick, you and I will knock him dead. So it was going to be Patrick and Nick. And we'll do it next year, though.
No, I didn't. It's funny you mention him, though, because they play the boys' final at the French Open last week. And he's sitting there in the front row, and he has a relationship with the kid from Taiwan who wins. And then they bring on the girls, and he's sitting there in the front row because he works with Coco Gauff, who is from South Florida. And I'm thinking this is reminiscent of a topless Mr. Bolotari sitting in for Monica Seles, and then sitting out for the next session when Andre plays. Do you see any of yourself in him?
Well, I do, and he is a very giving guy, and he also knows how to relate to people as individual people. And I think that's what makes him special, and he and I are the best of friends. And he just does a great job. And by the way, another lady that does a great job is Judy Murray. She's just does a great job. And, you know, Tony Nadal, hey, I don't know if Rafi would be where he is without Uncle Tony either, you know.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, it's obviously a different dynamic when it's your mom or your uncle versus this Italian guy in the west coast of Florida. But
right. Well, you know something, John? I don't know if anybody's going to do what I did, though. I did it first, John. And whether it was right or wrong, I had the balls to do something nobody else ever did, ever in the history of sports. And now the Academy is going from 20 acres, John, to 600 acres.
And not just tennis, right?
No, it's tennis. But you ought to come someday, John. You ought to come down and spend a couple of days, buddy.
Tell me, Love Me Zero is Saturday on Showtime. It premieres. Tell me about your book, because I didn't realize.
Yes,
we didn't know about this.
The book is going to be called A Coach's Journey, Sharing My Victories and Defeats, and it'll be divided in four or five sections. I wrote every single word, John. Every single word. There's going to be short lessons, pushy parents, pro versus going to college. And it'll be a book of all different messages, then and lessons. Then the book will then have motivational tips by Nick. And then what I learned from some of my best players. And there'll be about 30 of them that I learned lessons from. And then the impact that I've made on people's lives after they left here. And I can't believe some of the letters we're getting in. And I wrote this book, my own self, everything. Where I don't have a computer. I don't know how to use it. I wrote it all freehand.
Oh, man.
Because I want the people to know I wrote this book. No one helped me, John. Nobody. Nobody. And the PTR is going to help get it. It's being edited now. And we hope to have it out by the U.S. Open, John.
We'll have you on again when that comes out. If you wrote a whole book by hand, I hope you got an MTO. Because that's...
Well, John, also, I'd like to compliment you. You come right to the point. You know your stats, and I enjoy watching you when you're interviewed. And I think it's a big compliment that you took time to call me, John. I appreciate that, sir.
Oh, I appreciate that. Good luck with all this. We're gonna make sure people know where to watch Love Meet Zero,
okay.
And we'll see you. I guess we're not gonna see you at Wimbledon, but we'll see you. See you at the U.S.
At the Open.
Always a pleasure.
God bless you, John.
You as well. See you, Nick. All right, that does it for this week. That was our guest, Nick Bollettieri. I think you can see why he remains the magnetic figure he was. I would say, I don't even think polarizing. I would say mildly controversial in some quarters, but his body of work, his track record speaks for itself. Always entertaining talking and listening to Nick Bollettieri. And Jamie Lasanti, sitting in on this interview. See, this is old hat. Those of us who have been around tennis have had this experience before, and you sit and smile and admire. I get the feeling this was a new experience for you. What'd you make of our friend Nick?
The first thing I asked you was if I needed to edit this. I made mark of lots of curse words.
A little profanity slipped in there, but I think... if he's doing a documentary for Showtime, I think we're okay. That was Nick in a nutshell. An endearing figure, maybe bounces around topic to topic. Very good at. I think that there's an element of marketing that he does really well, but I think that in retrospect, what he really had a gift for was knowing how to motivate what athletes. And you look at his. The crop of athletes that have come through his facility, some were there longer than others, some of them he was more involved with than others, but male, female, you know, Jim Courier's upbringing is not the same as Maria Sharapova's upbringing. Andre Agassi's MO is not Monica Seles's MO, and yet he had not just relationships, but also sort of meaningful coaching input with all of them. What do you think listening to the man? I'm curious, not having been through that experience before, how that struck you.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I've obviously heard him speak before, but it was funny listening to you guys go back and forth. And as you said,
it wasn't a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, as you said, kind of just letting him loose. He is very much a salesman in kind of everything he says, which is, like you said, that's expected, I guess, of him. But it is remarkable, you know, what he has done with so many different players, as you mentioned. It's just interesting. I like, you know, the direction of the documentary is kind of talking about, as you said, his aces and faults, which I find very interesting because a lot of times people do sacrifice other parts of their lives in order to succeed in others. And so...
Did you see the documentary?
No,
I'll send you the link.
I watched the trailer.
You know, there are times when this filmmaker who's... Jason... Jason Cohn is his name. I don't think he had any sort of prior history with Nick Bollettieri, tennis fan. But there were times when he went back and forth and he says to Nick, this is on film. And this made the cut. And he says, oh, you're giving me the schmooze answer. I want to really know what you're thinking here. Don't give me the bullshit. Like, don't give me your canned prepackaged shtick. I really want to know what you're going through. And sometimes he gets it out of him and sometimes Nick won't go there. He doesn't talk much about the eight wives, except as he did with us, sort of facetiously. He doesn't talk about again what I was always told, which is the age of players coming through that academy is always a bit of a source of mystery. He said, "I plead the fifth," which I can respect that. But no, I mean, I think tennis will remember him very fondly. His Hall of Fame induction was there was some pushback and some controversy, but he finally, to mix metaphors, got to the finish line with that. And I also think, you know, you're 86 years old, and at some level you remain vital and active, and you heard he's going to Southeast Asia and he's coming back for the Open, but you also inevitably start thinking about legacy and how you want to be remembered and career retrospective, which I think to some extent this was. Did you ever have coaches like that that just for whatever reason they just knew how to connect with you?
Yeah, the one thing that the conversation sparked for me was the idea of a coach having such a reputation that everyone sort of thinks that they're going to change you as a player, sort of, if that makes sense. So people who think that, oh, if only I get on this team, or if only I get to this person's camp or get an hour with this guy,
right.
He's going to miraculously change how I play or how I think. I'm going to be such a better player because he's done it with, you know, all these other players that you kind of admire and look up to. I know for me playing soccer, there was coaches like that. And I had a coach growing up that I very much connected with. And he was, you know, my childhood coach, and the team was really connected through him. But I always wondered, there were coaches for me that were those people up on a pedestal. And I always wondered whether or not it was because they had that reputation or because they really were, you know, like, because where do you draw the line?
Yeah, right.
So that's something I thought of when he was talking and you guys were going back and forth about that.
No, it's interesting because I think at the very, very top level, I mean, Jim Courier said this was like, I think he said this was being on the Yankees. This was the ultimate validation to be part of this group. I think they're also, and especially as the Academy got more commercial, and with success, it expanded. And I think you had also a lot of, like, hacky players, you know, players at my level who, well, I'm going to go to Balotelli's. And, yeah, I think it was $900 an hour is what he charged for a private lesson. And I think there were also the sort of B-level players who thought, well, I'm just going to go to this magical place and I'm going to come out like Andre Agassi.
Exactly.
I'm glad, you know, Nick is terrific and people sort of know the story and he's written a number of books. But I do think I really appreciated the way this filmmaker really pressed him. And again, Eight Wives is something that's sort of become embedded in tennis lore, but there's a story there. And there are children that probably were emotionally neglected. And again, the story where the wife essentially says, it's me or Andre Agassi. And he says, tell me how much I need to send you in spousal maintenance because I'm picking Agassi. There's some room to dig there, and I think the film was sometimes successful, sometimes less so at getting him to go there. But anyway, I put Balotelli in this category of people that history will remember fondly. And again, if nothing else, just the sheer track record, just the players who have been through there, the Grand Slams represented. I mean, was he Serena Williams' primary coach? Probably not, but she did a stint there. Andre Agassi's was obviously more textured, but anyway, it's this is 90 minutes worth your time. Love Means Zero. Not an unflawed documentary, but still worth watching. Anyway, what else is on your mind? Anything? Roger Federer wins still another title as he creeps closer to both 100 titles and age 37. Equally
37.
Remarkable. 37, I know. What were we talking? Can I sell you out? You have editing power, so ultimately it's up to you to keep this or not. But remember we talked about Michael Stich winning Wimbledon in 91?
Yes.
Remember your response?
What, that I might have not been born yet?
Yeah. So in any case. So by larger point being 37, an athlete still at that level at age 37 must have a special resonance for you, as it does for me. Yours being under, mine being over. Anyway,
I had a few months when that happened, so it's all right.
Oh, on Michael Stich. All right, take that, Stich. All right, Jamie. I think that does it for this week. Always a pleasure talking with Nick.
I do want to say I did check the reviews, and people have been leaving reviews, so I want to say thank you to them.
Oh, okay. Good. Keep the reviews coming, right?
Yeah, keep them coming.
Help else with these public service announcements that you're better at than I am. What else? People should subscribe to this on...
Subscribe and leave some more reviews. Give us some stars.
And keep the guest suggestions coming, too, because they've generally been excellent. And even if we can't get the people as guests, someone suggested Alexander Stevenson again. I think that one came in yesterday. Interesting. Anyway, we will have another guest next week. Thanks to Jamie, as always. Thanks to Nick Bollettieri for, as always, an entertaining session. And again, the movie is Love Means Zero. It will air on Showtime on Saturday, June 23rd at 9 p.m. Eastern. All right, have a good week, everyone. We'll be right back.